Welcome to this week's Investors Chronicle Personal Finance Podcast. I'm Lenora Walters, and joining me today are Dave Baxter, Deputy Personal Finance Editor at Investors Chronicle, and Paul Sims, Head of EMEA ETF Fixed Income Product Management at Invesco. Bond funds had generally been out of favour with investors due to a number of concerns on this market, in particular during the last quarter of 2018. But by the second quarter of this year, investors appeared to be back in love with bonds, with net inflows into funds focused on this asset of $4.8 billion during this period, and in June alone, $2.4 billion. Dave, you've been looking at this. Why have bond funds found favour again of investors?
Hi, Leonora. A lot of it seems to be linked to monetary policy. Bonds tend to perform badly when interest rates rise because, in part, their yields simply look less attractive to investors. Go back to, say, October last year, the Federal Reserve in the US was looking at more aggressively raising rates, and that was unnerving bond investors slightly. But since the beginning of 2019, the Federal Reserve and other central banks have generally eased off in their rhetoric. They've signalled they'll be doing less raising rates. And we've now had, in July, the Fed cut rates for the first time in around a decade. So that's basically meant that the conditions are much more benign for bond investors.
Now, there's different types of bond funds. I mean, which ones have investors been particularly keen on?
Most of the bond fund sectors have done quite well in June. You've seen, for example, sterling corporate bond sector, which invests in kind of higher quality but lower yielding corporate debt. They've done quite well. You've also seen the likes of government bond funds have done well. But the real standout has been the sterling strategic bond sector. So in June, they took in £1.1 billion in terms of net sales, which is huge. It's really rare that fund sectors take in more than a billion. So they've been the obvious beneficiary.
What exactly are strategic bond funds and why do investors like them so much?
They're often described as go-anywhere bond funds because they're entirely flexible. Say, for example, a corporate bond fund is limited mainly to, as you'd expect, investing in corporate bonds. But a strategic bond fund can go all over the bond universe. So it can buy corporate bonds, it can buy some of the riskier bonds that yield more but potentially are more likely to default on their debt. But it can also go much more defensive. It can buy things like government bonds and generally higher quality debt. So they just have a much broader remit compared with any other bond product.
What are strategic bond funds investing in at the moment to deal with challenges facing the bond market?
It's an interesting one. This isn't an entirely exhaustive analysis, but if you look at some of the bigger, more popular strategic bond funds, they have generally been going a lot more cautious. So, for example, you take Jupiter Strategic Bond, which is now a huge bond fund, very popular. They have a significant weighting to the likes of government bonds. So they are basically going for a much more cautious defensive approach. Another example is M&G Optimal Income. The manager there, Richard Woolnough, also has a high weighting to higher quality bonds, although, so he has around 20% in government bonds, and then something like 40% in investment grade bonds, which are the higher quality corporate bonds. There are exceptions to this trend, but it's the impression I'm getting is that investors are favouring these kind of funds because they can be more flexible and more defensive right now.
Paul, you've run passive exchange-traded funds, or ETFs for short, which track bond indices rather than make active selections like the funds we've just been talking about. Have bond ETFs also increased in popularity with investors over the past few months?
Yes, definitely. We've seen a big increase in activity so far this year, actually, overall. Just to reiterate those comments about the change in stance of the central banks, global central banks, the Federal Reserve, initially in December announcing that they may pause in their hiking cycle and then gradually moving to a more sort of dovish tone throughout the earlier part of this year and then finally cutting a couple of weeks ago, has really provided a very sort of benign environment for bond funds overall. So central banks remaining accommodative. Yields towards the end of last year had approached levels which seemed relatively attractive. And if we look at the EMEA ETF space overall, we've seen around $40 billion of inflows into fixed income ETF so far this year, which compares with $16 billion for the whole of 2018.
Okay. Which of your bond ETFs are proving particularly popular with investors at the moment?
So we saw very strong demand earlier in the year for our US Treasury ETF. So we launched a range of US Treasury ETFs in January to allow investors to select different maturity buckets should they so wish. Now, out of those, the longest duration, the one with the highest interest rate risk, the 7 to 10 year maturity ETF, has had the most interest. So we saw shortly after launch around $1 billion of inflows in that in the first quarter. We've continued to see ongoing strong demand for that ETF as the Fed have sort of moved to that more accommodative stance, and that's obviously worked very well. We saw 10-year Treasury yields peaking around 3.2% in Q4 2018, and they've rallied about 150 basis points since then. So it's been a very strong rally in government bonds. The other area that we saw a lot of interest in earlier in the year is our 81 capital bond ETF. So this focuses on hybrid securities that are issued by bank for a regulatory requirement. And they offer a bit more yield because they're quite subordinated in the capital structure. Now, what we saw in the risk-off environment in the fourth quarter of last year is that yields on these 81 bonds rose quite significantly in that risk-off environment. And around year-end, we saw yields in excess of 8%, which was obviously quite attractive to investors. And we saw strong demand in the first quarter for that particular ETF.
Why are investors going into these? You know, what role could these bonds play in your portfolio? What are they getting at?
I guess you have to sort of be quite granular with look the way you look at fixed income to be able to answer this, because different types of bonds will have different characteristics and different uses for investors. So, you know, for that government bond space, the US Treasuries, that's very much about safe haven flows. And I guess that sort of coincides with the positioning of some of the active funds moving more defensive into government bonds. So, you know, fixed income plays an important role in many multi-asset portfolios. If you want to go more defensive, then you could use the core, the government bond building blocks. However, there is also a requirement for income in a lot of portfolios. So investors will look at the right balance between those lower risk government bond ETFs and then their ability to maybe take on more risk to generate some more income by going into either investment grade or high yield, or the more niche products, as I say, like the 81 space, where they can be very specific in what they're targeting. Elsewhere, we saw actually in the ETF universe that there have been very strong flows into emerging market debt, certainly in the first quarter this year. So again, a little bit of diversification of risks by going into different parts of the universe.
Okay. Now, traditionally, investors have turned to bonds to mitigate equity risk and downside, but some argue that this asset class is no longer as effective in doing this for a number of reasons. For example, it's not as uncorrelated, bonds have their own risks, etc., etc. Would you agree?
Well, I guess, you know, historic relationships don't always stand, and the environment is constantly changing. You know, I think if you're looking at using fixed income to mitigate that downside risk, you need to constantly monitor the behavior of the individual asset classes within fixed income and how those correlations are changing over time. Now, historically, you know, certainly government bonds have tended to have very low or negative correlations with equity markets, so have proved to be quite a good defensive tool against an equity market downturn. Obviously, as you move out or down the rating scale into investment grade or high yield, you increase that correlation generally with equity markets because you're taking on that credit risk. So, yes, there has been a sort of a change in that historic relationship. You know, since the financial crisis, obviously interest rate policy has remained very low from the central banks. They've employed unconventional easing policies, quantitative easing, which is constantly changing these relationships. And you know, they don't have the room to cut rates as aggressively as they might have done in the past. I would say these relationships are changing. However, there is still a use of fixed income because fixed income will tend to exhibit lower volatility than equity markets. they will prove to be slightly defensive in a pull back in riskier assets in that equity space. So while those relationships might not be as strong as they were previously, and as I say, I think the most important thing is for investors to constantly monitor the correlations between different asset classes to make sure that their overall allocation is behaving in the way they expect to be able to protect against any downturn or mitigate the risks in equity markets.
Okay. Now, Dave's flagged a number of other risks facing the bond market. How big a threat do you think these are? And what kind of bonds are most at risk from these?
So, I mean, you know, we're looking at this incredibly low yield environment, really, overall. Mm. You know, if we look at just the last few days, the entire German sovereign yield curve has gone negative. So you're paying the German government to lend the money for 30 years, which is obviously sort of brings a different risk from the nature of fixed income is generally to generate income for you. I think there's a couple of things that have happened within the last decade since the financial crisis, which maybe are hidden risks around the way issuance patterns have tended to develop. So as central bank policy has driven yields on core markets on those sovereign bonds very low, it's allowed riskier issues to issue more debt and maybe longer duration, longer maturity debt as well. So what we've seen certainly in the corporate bond universe is benchmarks have tended to increase in duration, so they are potentially slightly riskier, slightly more exposed to interest rate risk should there be a sell-off. And there's also probably an increase in weight to the lower rated securities within those universes. So that there's been a lot of sort of press coverage about the triple B problem, you know, the number of triple Bs, those companies that are just on the cusp of investment grade to high yield have become increasingly, increasingly important in the investment grade universe. So yes, risks are picking up. However, on the other side of that, I would say that you can maybe not be overly concerned right now about these. We've seen central bank policy remains incredibly accommodative. Overall, you know, while we remain in a sort of a low unemployment environment, inflation isn't really picking up and concerning central banks. And as we've just mentioned, you know, actually central banks have moved to a more dovish stance over the last 6 months. So I don't think they're looking to tighten policy in reaction to any specific shocks to the economy, whereby that would drive yields much higher. And be a concern for that interest rate risk, the duration risk in some of these funds. And they're very keen on promoting ongoing growth. So you're not choking off that the income for those lower rated corporates. So I think these are things that investors should be aware of, but I don't think there's an immediate risk within that.
Okay. Bearing that in mind, though, what areas of bond and debt markets are the best places to allocate to at the moment to avoid these issues?
So again, I think this, it really comes back to diversifying your sources of risk. I mean, I touched on the idea of, you know, monitoring the correlations between different asset classes and making sure you're not overly concentrated or overly exposed to certain parts of the market that then may not be behaving or reacting in the way that they may have done historically. I would, as I say, really look at diversifying those sources of risk, certainly within fixed income, and not looking at fixed income necessarily as a single asset class, but looking at the different areas from governments to investment grade to high yield, and then to more niche exposures, whether that's emerging markets or the AT1 product that I mentioned earlier. I think importantly, you know, when you look at the way you structure a fixed income part of your fund, you want to try and by diversifying those sources of risk, you really want to make sure you have low correlations between different parts of your portfolio. So what we've seen is that, you know, if you look at a kind of the strategic bond idea where there's some governments, some investment grade and maybe some high yield, for us, we've got the building blocks for each of those. But if you then add in something like the AT1 product, if you just tweak your allocation slightly, what you can actually do is you can improve returns and lower your overall volatility of returns, because what you're doing is bringing in an asset which has low correlations with other parts of your portfolio. So actually just by purely diversifying those sources of risk and making sure you're not overly concentrated, I think is quite a useful tool within fixed income.
So the old adage, don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Exactly.
Okay. passive funds such as ETFs can't actively select or exclude individual securities. So I'm going to play devil's advocate here and say at the moment, you know, it's a time of uncertainty. Wouldn't it be better for investors to access bonds via an active fund such as the strategic bond funds we've been talking about?
I think there's opportunities for both active and passive within the fixed income market. I don't think it's about having to make a choice between just purely choosing your active fixed income exposure or choosing to go purely passive. I think you can look at both of those together, and it will allow investors to maybe adjust their views or adjust their allocations to match their views on markets. And I think the way I'd look at it is, with certain parts of the market, and obviously a strategic bond has more flexibility, but if you look at other parts, such as, you know, if you look at a US Treasury fund, there isn't necessarily a huge amount of alpha generation that's available, because the tools to an active fund manager are their duration risk, their curve risk, maybe some off benchmark positions, but they'll generally be quite constrained by what they can do relative to their benchmark. So for those simple building blocks, such as a single currency or single country government bond fund, I think you really, particularly in this low yield world, want to be looking for the lowest cost exposure to that market. So that is really looking at the passive solution, looking at ETFs in particular. You'll get very low cost exposure to those markets. You can also be very specific about how you want to target some of your portfolios using passive funds. So, you know, as I mentioned, the 81 product, if you saw a particular sort of niche within the market, a particularly attractive yield within that, you could have made an allocation earlier in the year to the 81s, which would have worked very well, actually. That they've been probably our strongest performing fixed income ETF so far this year. So you would have been able to take that opportunity yourself with a very transparent and easy sort of access tool to that market. I think where, you know, the active side would work is maybe for those longer term allocations. You know, a strategic bond works well, but there will be periods of volatility. There are, you know, times when fund managers will underperform. So, you know, manager selection takes up a certain amount of time. Choosing the right fund to match what you're trying to do is time consuming. So there's a balance between, you know, that longer term allocation, spending some time devoting it to selecting your active manager, and then the quick and easy access tools to the market, which you can gain through the passive market and through ETFs.
Okay. Now, another problem with investing in passive funds that track bond indices is that you may be exposed to the companies and governments of most debt, because these are often the largest constituents of bond indices. I mean, how serious a risk is this? And is there anything you can do to avoid it other than accessing bonds via an active rather than a passive fund?
So again, this will be a problem with any fixed income fund that uses a simple market capitalization weighted benchmark. You know, the nature of that method does mean that the most indebted countries or companies will have the highest weight in the index. There's no avoiding that. So that may not always appear to be, you know, the best way to express your fixed income views. But it's not just a problem with the passive funds. As I mentioned, you know, active funds will generally be constrained to a degree against their benchmark and how far they can deviate from that benchmark. So they are still constrained to a degree on how active they can be on being under or overweight specific countries or companies. So this applies to both active and passive, but maybe to different degrees. There are certain things you can do to mitigate some of those risks. Now, the way we design all of our ETF products within EMEA is to meet the UCITS diversification requirements. That does avoid unnecessary concentration in the largest issuers. So we do make sure that we have diversified benchmarks. But you also have to be aware that the more you deviate from market capitalization weights, you can introduce other problems. So by reducing the weights in the largest countries or companies and increasing the weights into the smaller companies or countries, you're tending to move your allocation to bonds with lower liquidity. You know, there is a correlation between the amount of debt outstanding and generally the liquidity within that market. So you have to be careful on how far you go down that route, because you might find that you are actually introducing another risk by actually owning a lot of bonds in companies or countries that don't trade very easily. So there's an ongoing sort of monitoring of that you need to do. Now there are other ways that you can mitigate that risk. So for example, we have an emerging market debt, local currency emerging market debt ETF, which is managed by PIMCO. Now that uses a GDP weighted benchmark. So that avoids, you know, the allocating to the most indebted countries and is trying to gain access to the emerging market growth story. For our Fallen Angels product, which invests in bonds that have been downgraded from investment grade to sub-investment grade, we use a time-weighted methodology. So again, there are ways of looking at this to try and ensure you aren't being too concentrated in those most highly indebted countries or companies.
Okay, now I suppose I've been looking at the risks of bond ETFs, but turning to the positive, what are the main arguments in favour of accessing bonds via passive fund?
So I would start, firstly, you know, is that passively managed funds tend to have lower fees than actively managed funds. So your starting point in a low yield world is that low cost exposure. You know, for example, you know, our core building blocks are offered at very low cost for governments, around 6 basis points in treasuries and gilts. Additionally, when you're investing passively, you've got a certain level of transparency that goes with that. So the idea that a passive fund is trying to match a benchmark, you can see how that benchmark has behaved historically in different parts of an economic cycle. And you know that, you know, as long as we are tracking efficiently, that's the way it should continue to behave. Obviously, these, as I mentioned, correlations can change over time. But you've got that transparency. Now, in addition to just purely passives, in the ETF world, we're very transparent. You know, the actual underlying holdings of the ETFs are available on our website all the time. So you don't have that sort of, you only get the top 10 holdings once a month or once a quarter in your fact sheet. You can constantly monitor what the ETF is holding. So you do have that level of transparency. The other bits are maybe, as I mentioned, you know, you can use ETFs to target very specific parts of the market, the 81 story that I mentioned earlier. You know, if you'd seen an opportunity there, while the strategic bond funds may make an allocation to that because they've seen the opportunity as well, if they don't, or they just can't find the liquidity because they're very large, perhaps you could use a market access tool like an ETF to be able to really sort of direct where you want to make some of your allocation. Finally, and this is again specifically an ETF idea, it's just really about the liquidity. So obviously with funds, you are having to place an order which will be executed at a specific time in the market. It will have to be dealt in the market at that time. Within ETFs, we're priced through the day. If you decide to buy or sell a fund right now, you can do so. You don't have to wait until the dealing time, which may be tomorrow at noon, and you have a 24-hour delay on your market risk. So I think there's a lot of sort of reasons behind, you know, accessing the market via passive. Certainly that cost and transparency is very important. As I say, I'm not against active management by any means, and some of our ETFs are actually active as well. So, you know, there is a combination, but I think for that low-cost access and transparency, ETFs and passive vehicles are particularly useful.
Okay, thank you, Paul. Some really interesting and helpful points. And see this week's funds news in the magazine online for Dave's full report on bond funds. That brings us to the end of today's show, but also see this week's Investors Chronicle over website at investorschronicle.co.uk for more on strategic bond funds, passive investing, and the risks and rewards of fixed income. Thank you for listening and have a good weekend.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.